Take this opportunity to welcome those that are visiting with us. We want you to know that we're happy that you're here. We ask that you would open your Bibles and minds as we study some things together this morning. We hope that it will be an encouragement to you. If you have any questions concerning anything you hear or what you've seen, we'd be more than happy to sit down with an open Bible and an open mind and come to a better understanding of God's Word. It's our hope and our aim here that we strive to do God's will and to teach those things that are contained in His will, no more and no less, for that would be pleasing to Him and it would be edifying to you. Please take your Bibles out, turn to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 10. We're hastening to the end of this book. And this morning we want to talk about the characteristics of wisdom. Again, we want to keep in mind that we are looking at a book written by the wise man Solomon, whose wisdom was given to him by God. And Solomon is asking the questions concerning life. What is the purpose of life? Where is happiness found? Where can we find joy? Where can we find contentment? Where can we find the things that will make life beneficial and most successful for us to live? And so he's asking and seeking the answers to these questions by three things. One, by human observation, two, by human wisdom, and three, by experience of life. And again, when we get to the end of the book, which we will get to very quickly, we will find his answer to the question concerning the answer to the question of life. This morning, we want to talk about wisdom. Wisdom has been a constant theme in Solomon's search for the meaning of life. Indeed, wisdom is a very important part of being able to live our life here in a way that will be profitable. But it depends on which wisdom that we lean upon. Life is full of inadequacies. There's inequities in everything in life. There are things that are just not fair. They don't appear to be fair. They seem to be uneven. But yet, it's just part of life, and we need to understand that. We also know that foolishness can destroy wisdom. If you're a fool, or you play the part of a fool, it can destroy any amount of wisdom that you might gain or you might have because it will be offset by your foolishness. And wisdom that is not always appreciated is not only God, but also man. Now, in this context, Solomon is not saying that human wisdom doesn't have a role to play, but it's where we put the emphasis on. Is our wisdom more on the physical side of human wisdom, or as it leans more on the side of divine wisdom? That's going to have a lot to do with how you're going to live your life. And so let's begin this morning by reading some of the texts in Ecclesiastes chapter 10. We're beginning in verse number 1. It says, "Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool heart is at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he's a fool. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses." Now, one mistake and wisdom can disappear. It doesn't take many decisions or actions that could cause great wisdom or good wisdom to dissipate and disappear to where it cannot be seen or it cannot help you out of a difficult situation. A little folly can devalue wisdom and honor. One can devalue the wisdom and the good that they've done in their life by one act of folly or by devaluing the wisdom and the correct wisdom in your life. One sin can destroy a lifetime of good. You know, I tell people all the time that it takes a lifetime to build character, but it only takes one instance to destroy it. And so it must be something that's prized greatly. And again, we can always repent. We can always take back, and we can always say we're sorry for something we've done or said. But once you get it out there, and once you've done it, then it's part of the equation. Then it's part of the person that you are. And many times, unfortunately, in the lives that we live here on earth, people don't remember the good, but they always remember the bad. And they always seem to kind of mirror and kind of focus on that. And not sad, but that's the way human nature is. And so we've got to be careful that we always strive to use wisdom in every aspect of our lives. A small fly in an expensive perfume ruins it and produces a foul odor. He's using an illustration. You just think about how little a fly is. And yet you could have an expensive perfume and you let that fly get in there and it will destroy all the good, and the efforts of that perfume will be destroyed by such a small object. What's his point? He's not talking about perfume and a fly. He's using it as an illustration. A little folly can destroy much good. Many things in our lives can be destroyed and marginalized and minimized by a little bit of folly. By just not thinking things through. By just not taking the time to understand the situation and making a good decision instead of being too quick to judge, too quick to act, and many times too quick to speak. That we can destroy a lot of good in our lives. The heart of the wise man keeps on the right path. A foolish person does the opposite. In Proverbs chapter 4, verse number 23, and this is another book written by the wise man Solomon. If you like the underline passages in your Bible, this is a good one to never forget. It is a very small verse, but it is very powerful. In chapter 4, verse 23, he wrote, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life." Ladies and gentlemen, everything about who you are, what you are, what you will do, and the course and the action and the path that you choose in life is determined by what's in your heart. You cannot act, you cannot think, you cannot do anything until it first enters your mind and enters your heart. And so we need to be very careful what we put in our mind and what we put in our conscience. Because those things come out in words, in actions, in words, in deeds, and in thoughts. And all of that can lead us in a direction that will prove very detrimental to our character and to our example and influence. The fool lacks wisdom even in the simplest of acts. A person's conduct shows the course of their heart. You know, I can't read your heart. I don't know what's in your mind. I don't know what's on your mind. I don't know what you're thinking about. But if I'm around you long enough, and if I observe you long enough, in time, I can reach a conclusion about who you are and what's important to you and what's vital to you and whether you are a person of wisdom or whether you're a fool by the things that you do and how you conduct your life. You know, the Bible tells us in John chapter 7 to not judge by appearance, but make righteous judgment. And the Bible also tells us in the book of Matthew, by their fruits you shall know them. People can get to know who you are by just observing the life that you live and the decisions you make. Believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, people are mindful of us as God's children. And all they look for and all they hone in on is for us to act not in accordance to what we profess to be. Because what that does is solidify in their mind that they don't need to have Christianity, they don't need to be a Christian, because they do that, you do that, and yet you consider yourself a Christian, and so that doesn't make you any better than them. But you know, the truth of the matter is, you're not going to be judged by me. You're not going to be judged by another person. You're going to be judged by the God of this world. You're going to be judged by the Lord himself. And he's going to use your standard. He's not going to use me. He's not going to use your neighbor. He's not going to use your parents. He's going to use your life, your choices, your decision. And he's going to use it with this standard. And that's going to be the area of judgment. Fools' deficiency are evident to all. They cannot be hidden. If a person plays the position of a fool, it doesn't take long to figure it out. It doesn't take, you don't have to have a college education to realize that a person is making detrimental decisions in their life. You don't have to. You can see that they're destroying their lives by the decisions. I got a good friend who lives up in Ohio. That's destroying his life. He just, and it's very evident by the decisions that he's making. And he knows better. He was raised better. And he understands better. But because he's not thinking clearly, he is making decisions that's going to bring his life around his shoulders if he doesn't wake up. And you know what? It's hard to watch. It's very difficult to watch. Because people that love him and people that care for him have tried to help him, have tried to encourage him to do different, and he just doesn't see it. It's sad. People can see it in other people, but they cannot see it in their own lives. Anger can be calmed by keeping one's head. In Proverbs 15, verse 1, is a very small verse. It says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. You know, when people get angry, how do you dissipate anger? You dissipate anger by remaining calm. Not escalating it. Not turning up the heat. Not returning anger for anger. Because then, that's going to end badly. Being calm in the presence of anger is a great benefit. When we have a calm spirit, we can disarm anger. We can minimize it. We can marginalize it. You know, it's sometimes husband and wife, when you get into disagreements, it's not who can yell the loudest that wins. We need to remember what happens when anger enters a situation. When anger enters a situation, any decision you make is a decision without reason. Because when you have anger, reason goes out the window. It doesn't matter anymore. All you do is you want to get even or you want to win the argument. And what you end up doing is making yourself a fool. You need to have a calm demeanor. To be look at things, step back. You know, sometimes we say, step back. Count to 10. And you know what that means? That just means to take a step back, take a deep breath, and think before you open your mouth. Because sometimes we put not one foot in, but two. Because we don't stop and think. Let me give you this piece of advice. Anger will never make any situation better. In any circumstance. Anger is going to lead you in a direction you don't want to go. So, you have to remain calm. There is an evil that I've seen under the sun, as an arrow proceeding from a ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich set in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent. He who quarries stone may be hurt by them, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. If the axe is dull and one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength, for wisdom brings success. A serpent may bite when it is not charmed. The babbler is no different. I really like that verse, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Folly of human judgment. Sometimes poor character evaluations cause many heartaches. Placing one in authority and ignoring people more qualified because they're my friend or because I like them, and I'm not looking at the large picture, and I'm not looking at what, you know, under the sun, he means under the earth. He means he's talking about human wisdom. Is the most qualified person always put in the position of authority? Absolutely not. Sometimes we make bad choices. Sometimes we do that in our own government. Sometimes we choose people that we think, because we didn't do our homework, we think that they're the right person for the job, and then when they get in there, we find out that they bring us many heartaches because we didn't do a proper evaluation. We didn't look, you know, the person that talks the best, the person that has good charisma And the person that says things that are pleasant, that's not always the person that's going to do the best job. You know, if I'm going to put a person in a position of authority, I want to know how he's done in the past. How's he done in the past when he's been in positions of authority? Has he ever been in a position of authority? And when he was, how did he use it? That's going to tell me a lot about what he or she might do. And so sometimes people that are less qualified are put into positions that they're really not qualified for, and people that are more qualified are put under their authority. And you know, we see this every day in our lives. We see it on our jobs. We see it, like I said, in government. We see it in the city, state, federal level. It happens. Why? Because people don't use wisdom. And does it cause a lot of heartaches? You know that it causes a lot of heartaches. Favoritism and partiality often manifests itself in civil government. When unqualified and unworthy individuals are appointed, social unrest lies ahead. And ladies and gentlemen, sadly, our nation and even the state, to some degree, we need to use better wisdom in how we evaluate. You know, sometimes, we think that if we choose from with our pocketbook what we think is better for us economically, that that's going to be better for us in the long run. We made this mistake in 2008. We made it again in 2012. We're thinking that economically making a decision was going to make things better. But ladies and gentlemen, you take a good look at the climate in this country. I'm not talking about economically. I'm talking about morally. Morally, this nation is headed to bankruptcy. We have no respect for human life. Matter of fact, we've got a bill that needs to be passed in Congress that is not being passed because they're fighting about the language of abortion in a bill, and one party is not going to forward things that need to be accomplished for the security of our country until they take that language out of the bill because it's against the principles that they stand upon. But the other side, the majority of people in our country want that in our Constitution. They want it to be a constitutional amendment that a woman can get the right to abortion at any point in her pregnancy. Brethren, we need to wake up. That's the days that we're living in. What is the hot button issue this year in next year's election? Homosexual marriage. Same-sex marriage. The majority of our country want it. The brethren, what happened? What happened to the nation that was supposed to be founded upon Christian values? What happened? I'll tell you what happened. America went asleep, and they didn't listen, and they didn't think things through. And what's happened is a different agenda has taken over. And brethren, I'm not talking about politics. Forget about politics. I'm talking about morals. Morals aren't political. Morals are determined by God. And one of the things that brought down the evil nation of Rome, one of the very first things that brought Rome to destruction was their morality, their lack of appreciation for human life and morals. And it ended up destroying that mighty nation. And ladies and gentlemen, we're headed down that same road. And again, that is a lack of wisdom. Luxury is not fitting for a fool, much less a servant to rule over princes. Again, putting unqualified people in positions of power has detrimental effects at every level. You know what? We could even talk about it in the church. You put unqualified elders in a church, and you're going to have no need, you're going to have no end to the unrest that you're going to have. Because once you get them in there, how are you going to get them out of there? And once they begin to lead you in a direction that's contrary to the truth, then you're going to end up destroying the church. But yet they never should have been put in there because they weren't qualified to begin with. So when you put unqualified people in positions of authority, you are headed for problems. That's a lack of wisdom. Often the kind of mistake that's made in the Lord's church, slaves on horses. Sometimes the best qualified are the ones sitting on the sidelines while others are less of ability to do the work. That's evil. Why? Incompetence frequently gains more power, causing the majority to suffer. Let me give you an illustration of what I'm talking about. It's easy to be an armchair quarterback. And in case you don't know what that means someone that sits on the sideline criticizes every decision that's made because they're not the ones making it. It's easy to do that. But you know, it's a little bit more difficult. Sometimes, it's interesting to me that, you know, as a preacher, I get advice all the time, and that's okay. I've used some of the advice I've got because it's good. But you know what? It amazes me, people who give advice who aren't willing to take the advice they're giving themselves. Isn't that ironic? It's okay for you to do it, but it's not okay for me to do it. You see, in 3 John, the Apostle John wrote this epistle because there was a man named Diotrephes who wanted to have the preeminence in the church. But he wasn't content to just have the preeminence. And preeminence means to have the top honor, to be the top dog. He wasn't content with that, but he tried to keep everybody else out that would challenge his preeminence. Now, brother, you know what? I've been in the church long enough that I've seen men just like that, who their only intention is they want to be the most important person, and they don't really care about anybody else. And again, that's folly. And that's going to be end terribly. And so, you know what? We have to use wisdom in the people that we put in positions to make decisions that affect a lot of people. We need to use wisdom. Bold endeavors are sometimes disastrous. Carefully look at the situation and think ahead of what can happen. You know, sometimes we don't look any further than the nose on our face. We don't look long term. You know, we don't think long term. This is probably one of the greatest mistakes that young people make. They think of the moment. They don't think about what this is going to do to the rest of their life. They don't think about what can happen down the road. They don't think how this will affect their future. They don't think about how this could affect the rest of their life. People don't think about that. They just think about the moment. You see, that's not using wisdom. That's going to get you into trouble. Remember Haman and his gallows. Remember, he hated Mordecai. He hated Mordecai because he wanted to show him the dignity and the respect that he thought he was due because he was top dog. And so because he got angry, he didn't want to just kill Mordecai. He wanted to kill every Jew that was in Shushan. He wanted to kill every one of them. And so he went home one day, and Esther had thrown a banquet for him. And then when he goes out the gate, he's real happy. He's all puffed up because he thinks Esther's done this because he's a great person. And he comes out and he goes out the gate and there's Mordecai. And Mordecai's just sitting there. Doesn't get up to grant him, doesn't show him respect, doesn't kiss his hand. And he goes home and he sulks. And he's angry. His wife says, "What's the matter with you? She's your second in command. Go to the king." He said, "Why don't you build a gallows 50 cubits high and go to the king and tell him to hang Haman on it?" He says, "Good, that's what I'll do." So he commanded for the gallows to be built. Next day, there's another banquet. And the king, after the banquet, held out the golden scepter for Esther and says, "What can I do for you? Ask up to half the kingdom and I'll give it to you." What did Esther say? "Preserve my people. Because there's an edict that's went out that seeks to destroy me and all of my people." And you know what the king said? "Who is such a man that's going to do that?" Hang me. Right here. And you remember? The king's so angry, he runs out and Haman falls on the queen's couch, pleading for his life. And the king comes in. And he puts a bag over his head. And one of the men say, he built a gallows for Haman. He built a gallows to hang Mordecai. The king said, go hang him on it. And he ended up dying. And the rest of the story is, God's people were spared because of the courage of Queen Esther. Simple tasks could be approached with caution. Everything is subject to chance. You know what? You make the best decision you can. I'll make the best decision I can. But it doesn't always work out that way. Because there can be unforeseen things that happen that we have no control over that can make our decisions not work out the way we planned. That's part of life. We need not to beat ourselves up about it. That can happen. That happens every day. That's just part of this thing called life. An axe is dull. You know, what's the point? You know what? You got to chop down the wood. You got to make firewood. But you know what? You better have a sharp axe. Because if you don't have a sharp axe and it's dull, you might get the wood chopped, but it's going to take you a long time. And it's going to be a lot harder work. And it's going to be a lot more strenuous. But it could have been a lot easier if you would have prepared your tools to be more effective and efficient in completing the task. Wisdom is a valuable commodity in protection from failure. When you think of all the things that could happen and you prepare for all the things that can happen, then you have a better chance of success. And even when things don't go like you planned, they don't knock you off the point because you've already made plans for what you'll do if that doesn't go the way you thought it would go. You see, wisdom can help you avoid pitfalls, and even when pitfalls come, you can prepare for them and be better able to overcome them. Now, brethren, tell me that life hadn't taught us that. Life teaches us that. When we think things through and we use wisdom in the decisions and choices we make, that's going to prove to be beneficial. If one is going to have success in teaching the gospel to others, let me use an illustration. If I'm going to have any success in teaching my neighbor the truth, in teaching my family the truth, in teaching my neighbor the truth, there's some things you're going to have to do. You're going to have to know God's word. You can't teach what you don't know. Now that doesn't mean you have to know it. You have to know it. You know, and be able to memorize the whole Bible. That's not what I'm saying. But you've got to know enough to be able to get that information to another person. You must be a good student of the book. You must love to study the Bible. You're not going to grow in knowledge if you don't love the Bible. You're not going to read the Bible. You're not going to study the Bible. You're not going to meditate upon the Bible if you don't love it. And then you've got to have a love for the lost. You've got to have a concern for people who are lost. People that are going in the wrong direction spiritually. You've got to have a love for their soul. And if you don't have that, then all the knowledge in the world that you have will not help you. You can know the Bible from backwards to forward, but if you don't love the souls of the lost, it's not going to benefit you in helping them. You see, you've got to have knowledge, but you've got to have knowledge to know how to use that knowledge, to use it in a wise way. Brethren, I've seen people in the Lord's church have a lot of knowledge, but they didn't use it properly, and they did more harm than they did good. You've got to use it wisely. Laziness will kill any talent that one may have. Laziness is a bad trait no matter what we're talking about. Talking about physical labor, talking about spiritual work, talking about in your family, in your human relationship. Laziness will be a killer to the good that you can have in your life. Having ability does little good if we procrastinate in using it. I don't know how many times I've heard in my lifetime, well, I'm gonna study the Bible more. I'm gonna become a better Bible student. I'm gonna prepare myself to be a better teacher. And before you know it, life runs out on you. It's dangerous to procrastinate. Something that we've become very good at. Putting off what we can do today for tomorrow. And then tomorrow we put it off to the next day. Dangerous, dangerous, dangerous. The words of the wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. I've met some people like that. A fool also multiplies his words. No man knows what is to be, Who can tell him what will be after him? The labor of four worries them, for they do not even know how to go to the city. Woe to you, O lamb, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O lamb, when your king is a son of nobles, and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness, the hands of the house leak. A feast is made for laughter, and wine makes merry, but money answers everything. Remember that phrase. Do not curse the king, even in your thought. Do not curse the rich, even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the manner. A lot of wisdom in that verse. The fool's lips consuming in four areas. When a fool does not think his thoughts and his words through, there are four areas that will catch him. Number one is reputation. It's going to destroy his reputation. Number two is character. His character is going to be flawed, and it's going to be flawed to anybody that sees it. Number three is impact for good. A foolish person that makes foolish decisions can't have a good impact on anyone. He doesn't even have a good impact on his own life. Number four, he ultimately consumes the man himself. In Matthew chapter 12, verse 36, the Bible says that man will give an account of every idle word and thought that he has said. Everyone will give an account. You see, foolish speaking and lacking wisdom destroys character. It destroys reputations. It destroys your impact and influence for good. And in the end, it will destroy the fool, both physically and spiritually. It is inevitable. It will happen. Fool's talk begins with senseless, illogical talk, and it ends with irrational actions. Fools multiply his words. Read Proverbs 29, verse 11. You ever heard people that say they speak a lot, but they don't say anything? They go on, and when they're done, you're no more worse or no more for the better because you don't understand what they said because they didn't say anything. No concept of present or future. His labor does nothing but weary him. Doesn't even know how to go into a city. That's a simple task. All you do is walk in or go into a city. He can't do the simplest of tasks. Show how he's unable to accomplish even the simplest of tasks. And then he talks about the king being a child. Inexperience, immaturity, incapable. Ladies and gentlemen, does not life itself teach us that people that are in positions of authority, that are inexperienced, that are immature, that are incapable of making a decision, how can they benefit the whole? How can they lead in a way that's going to be beneficial to others? But a king that is a son of nobles, and all that means is here's a person of experience. He's well trained, he's qualified, he's respected because of his family, because of his character. He has a better chance for success than the person who is inexperienced, immature, and incapable. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't just work in the physical area, it works in the spiritual area. The person that's going to be more profitable for God's work is the one that's well-trained, the one that's qualified, and the one that's respected because of the character of his life and the disposition of how he conducts himself around other people. That person is going to have more to do and going to be more effective in doing the Lord's work than one that is immature, inexperienced, and incapable, not because of talent, not because of ability, but because he doesn't apply the talent and the ability that he has. That's the difference. Ladies and gentlemen, people that are effective in the Lord's work is not because they have ability. That's not always true. People that are more effective in the Lord's work are people who have the tenacity and the determination and the commitment to do what needs to be done. It's not just talent and ability. Talent and ability will only get you so far. But you're going to have some of these other things to be profitable to others. Feast in the morning, all that means is at proper times. There's a time to eat. There's a time to sleep. But when we do it out of due season instead of proper time, if we do it when it's not, when we should be, instead of eating, we should be working. Instead of trying to do what's right, we're doing something else that may not be wrong in itself, but we're not doing it at the proper times. Eat and drink not for strength, but for gluttony and drunkenness. It's okay to eat and drink, but it's not to be a glutton. It's okay to drink, but it's not all right to drink things that take away your ability to think. You see, it's not the action. The action can be wrong, but it also can be wrong when it's done at the wrong time. You know, it's not wrong to go fishing. It's not wrong to play golf. It's not wrong to go to a ball game, but it's wrong to do it when you should be serving the Lord or when you should be worshiping with the saints. It's not wrong to do it, but it's wrong to do it at the time that you do it. And you know what teaches you that? Wisdom. Knowledge. To understand that spiritual things must come first. You use wisdom in the decisions that you make. Sometimes it's not what we do that's wrong, it's when we do it that's wrong. Because we put our priorities in the wrong place. That's not using wisdom. Laziness of a fool is not always felt. You know what? When the animal doesn't prepare for the winter, it doesn't bother him in the summer and fall. But when the cold comes, when there's no food and nowhere to get it, then the problem comes. Just because something's not immediately felt doesn't mean that it's not going to end badly. Things break down over time. You know what? You make bad decisions. And you go and you lack wisdom in the decision, the choice you make in your life. It may not have an effect in your life in the beginning. But over time, it's going to prove detrimental and dangerous to your future. You know what? People don't turn into alcoholics. People don't turn into drug addicts. People don't turn into to people who gamble their life, their family, their future. That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen one day you're not doing it, the next day you go off the deep. It doesn't happen that way. It happens a little bit at a time. And every decision that a person makes puts him one step closer to going down a road that will end badly. I have talked to enough drug addicts, alcohol addicts, pornography addicts, people who are addicted to gambling. I have talked to enough of those people in my lifetime to have every one of them that I've ever talked to, that I ever tried to help, that I ever studied with, that did not tell me that the first mistake that they made and the first mistake in wisdom they did is the first time they went down that road, because that put them on a path that led them to destroying the rest of their life. Now, brethren, it doesn't seem... You know what? I've lived in Las Vegas for 13 years. I've seen a lot of slot machines. Seen a lot of blackjack tables. I've watched men make a lot of bets. But you know what? It doesn't look harmless when you're looking at it. Doesn't seem to be anything wrong when I'm looking at it. How many of us go into the gas station to get gas? And we got to wait in line because the person in front of us is buying lottery tickets. And it looks like they can't afford to buy the lottery ticket, but yet they buy them. Doesn't look harmless there, does it? You know what kills me about that? Yesterday, watching a ball game, they got that Kentucky Lotto commercial. And all they're showing is about all the good that it does, because it gives $100 million to education. You know what? I wouldn't care if it gave $1 million to education. That's not why people play the lottery. People don't play the lottery to help the education of your state. They pay the lotto because they want to win $1 million. They don't care one thing about the education of your children. They're playing it to win. That's the game. That's the aim. But it doesn't look harmless, doesn't it? Do you know? I don't know how many of you pay any attention. But a few months ago, there was a Powerball thing that got up to $210 million in one state. A fella took a 50,000 second mortgage on his home and bought lottery tickets with the $50,000. Asked me if he won. doesn't use. Lack of attention causes things to decay. A rainy cannot fix the roof because it's raining now. What about when it stops raining? That's when you get up and fix the roof. And you know what? You know when you're going to remember that you should have fixed it? When it starts raining again. We need to do things when they need to be done. Feast and food solely for personal enjoyment. Wine so I can get drunk and make my life merry. Shallow happiness. Money answers all problems. Think so? You know, one of the richest men I ever knew, Elvis Presley. When he died, he had $1 million in his checkbook. His estate still makes $400,000 and $500,000 a year, 40 years almost after his death. But if you read anything about the life of Elvis Presley, he's a very unhappy man. He had to do everything out of the public's eye. He couldn't go around and do things normally because he couldn't be around people because they wouldn't leave him alone. He had to protect his children because he was worried somebody kidnapping Lisa Marie. And if he wanted to take her to a music park, he had to rent it out for all night after midnight, and he'd be the only one there. And anybody he invited. And if you read about his life killed Elvis Presley. But he had adoration. He's probably the greatest singer in our lifetime. Probably had more ability of any. I don't think we'll ever see another man that had the ability and talent of Elvis Presley. But yet he paid a very steep price for all that fame, for all that adoration, and for that life. It ended badly at 42 years old. Money's not the answer to everything. It's an end to a means. If it's used wisely. Failure to use the gifts that God's blessed us with can either hurt you or it can help you, depending on how you use it. Cursing a king, that's dangerous. Has power, the ability to punish. You know, I learned that in the military. I didn't like a lot of decisions my supervisors made, but you know, it wouldn't have been very bright for me to go and tell them they didn't know what they were doing. That they were dumb as a box of rocks, that wouldn't have done me too much good. You know why? Because I didn't end up in the brig. I understood that. Cursing the rich is evidence of jealousy and envy. I don't envy the rich. You know what? Rich people have problems that you and I don't have. They have problems that I would not want to have. So there's nothing to be jealous and envious about. We need to practice self-control. We need to keep our petty opinions to ourselves. If one would not speak words to the face of a person, he should not think them. Brethren, if you have ill will or you have something that you need to iron out with somebody else, you need to go tell them. And you need to quit brooding about it. And you need to quit telling other people. And you need to go right to them. And you need to work it out. Because you know why? Because Romans Matthew 12 says that we'll give an account of every thought that we've had in our heads. Every thought will be given account of. In conclusion, we need to keep things in proper perspective. True wisdom can be found only in the hands of prudent men. There is a value to earthly wisdom, but earthly wisdom can only take you so far. It can only do so much good for you. But when earthly wisdom is coupled with divine wisdom, and divine wisdom is leaned upon more than human wisdom, then human wisdom will be better because it will be funneled and it will be channeled through the scope of divine wisdom. If I have wisdom in God and I have wisdom in His Word, then every decision I make is going to be channeled through how it affects my life with God and how it affects my relationship with Christ. And if I think that way, and if I use wisdom that way, then the decisions I make, even in the human realm, are going to be better and more productive for me because I lean upon divine wisdom and how I use human wisdom. Ladies and gentlemen, life presents us with choices. And the choices that we make in our life, they can be helpful, they can be hurtful. Learn from Solomon's reason. His mistakes. Listen, folks. Here is a man that had authority, had power, had money, had possessions, had wisdom greater than any person that's ever lived on this earth. What did he do with his life? You remember how Solomon's life ended? He was going to the houses of pagan worship with his wife and consulting mediums instead of consulting the God that gave him wisdom and greatness and power and wealth unsurpassed. He ended up turning against God. You know why? He didn't apply the wisdom that God blessed him with. Is there a lesson there? God gives us the greatest wisdom that is in existence. But if you don't use it, if you don't apply it, if you don't believe in it, it's of no value to you. It'll just well remain on a bookshelf in a store if you're not going to look at it, if you're not going to learn it, if you're not going to apply it, and you're not going to put it to use in your life, then it's of no value to you. You see, wisdom is something that we attain by the decisions and choices we make. If you have knowledge, ladies and gentlemen, do you have the wisdom to know how to make that knowledge work for you to what's best for you in your life? Think about that. If you're here and you're not a child of God, we don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to become one. We also want to give an opportunity to any of you in the audience whose life might not be right with God. You need to correct some things. You need to get back on the path of righteousness. We're here to help you in any way we can. If we can do so, we bid you come forward as together we stand.